Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
File and on FM.
From the home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
From the sky.
Charles and Lyle.
Always wanted to play that on live. Good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. My name's Tom Wallin and it's Thursday the 27th of October. Joining me in the studio tonight, Nathan Muller. Nath, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Living dream. We're all going then. All live, are we?
Well, let's hope so. Someone
we're talking in a room on ourselves, having a nice little chat.
Yeah, someone will tell us soon if we're not, that's for sure. Louis away this week, as you've probably guessed. We've sneaked him north of the border, doing a bit of scouting, checking on Tony Watt, hopefully, amongst other things. But while he's away, we've got plenty to talk about. We're obviously going to mention a certain someone going on to TalkSport today. We're going to talk about the banner day, which is coming up, go through the card statement and the recent protests. We'll talk about the Hummel new kit deal, 5-year kit deal announced earlier this week, and the decision to get the fans involved in that, which I think we can all agree is good news. Our Charlton connection this week, we've got three players who we're going to mention. We've got Jason Lee, Leon Clark and Jamal Campbell-Rice.
Considering we thought we was clutching for straws, we've actually found three of them.
Yeah, and we've got some interesting information on a couple of them as well. So we've got those. And then finally, we'll look ahead to Chesterfield. We'll talk about Slade's press day today and generally look ahead to a game that hopefully we're going to go on to win. But yeah, first things first, I think we can't go anywhere else than catch you in on TalkSport today. You weren't able to hear it today, Nath, is that right?
No, yeah, I knew it was happening and I started reading it at work and then I sort of had the realisation that I probably should be doing a lot more work than reading about 26 pages on Charlton Life. So I read a couple of bits, but I haven't had the chance to listen to it yet. But I know you've probably had the joy of listening to it.
Twice, unfortunately.
Yeah, I did see someone on the bus here. I did see someone called up TalkSport and they refused to put them through and that, which was quite interesting. But
That's certainly part of it. We'll go on to talk about that as well. Yeah, unfortunately, I had to listen to it twice. I listened to it as it was going out live, forgot I had a meeting, and then had to spend my lunchtime re-listening to it so I could actually note down what was said so we could discuss it tonight. So
commitment.
Yeah,
that's commitment for you.
Wouldn't have been my first choice, but never mind. So she joined Jim White and Danny Murphy in the studio, and someone else as well, but I can't remember who. But obviously Jim White had talked about it in his show a week or so ago. He'd bumped into Katrien at the Gillingham game and said that he was going to get some answers. So I've written down a few of the main points, as I say, because you won't have heard it.
Okay.
So we'll kind of go through them and see whether you think they've got the answers. I think social media has told us clearly that most fans don't think they have.
Feel a bit under pressure.
Going
in cold.
So, the first thing that Jim White goes on to talk about is that Duchatelet doesn't come anymore. That's something we've known for a while. You know, he's not interested in coming to the club.
Yeah.
And Katrien doesn't really mention that at all. She avoids that and just, you know, mentions that we're not a pressing concern for him, that he's got 7,000 employees that he has to look after and kind of avoids that question. So they move fairly quickly on. And the first real point is regarding the managerial appointments. So they talk about the fact that fans are unhappy, distressed at the managerial appointments that have come in, mainly Belgian, as we're well aware. And Katchen responds by saying, "I understand the fans are upset. We did well apart from last season, and we've turned a corner in the summer."
Right, okay.
What's your first thoughts?
So first off, I was wondering, I was thinking, oh, what am I going to say? I started panicking. That last one, shot herself in the foot straight away.
You'll be fine.
So what was the exact word she said?
I haven't quoted, but she basically says, "I understand why the fans are upset. We did well apart from last season," which I'm pretty sure that's a direct quote.
Year on year. So if you're running a business, right, everyone out there who runs a business, you focus, your forecast, whatever, year on year improvement, right? So, and then you strive to be a better business and a better brand or whatever. Which, if you look at us, we're a prime example of that. If you look at us, finish what, 9th in the Championship and now 17th in League One. I think that's blatantly obvious that, you know, it's a vast improvement over the last 3 years.
But fans, again, that's
it's
exactly
crazy.
What we're looking for,
absolutely,
isn't it?
It's crazy. But we sort of knew that the old spiel was going to come out again. But I just don't see how you can say that. I don't see how you can have the front to say that, and just the intelligence, just how you can logically say, oh, we've been better year on year.
Mm.
It goes back to the whole appointment of the manager thing. We've got better, and it's been done for the right reasons. And oh, yeah, it's like a broken record, but yeah, I mean, that one's straight away farcical.
What about the fact that she says we've turned a corner in the summer? Now, obviously, in the summer, we did see Slade come in. I think largely we were more positive about that, certainly, than we have been about any other appointment under Roland. We did bring in players who were not only experienced at this level, but proven. Novak, McGuinness, Jose, Holmes, they've all got goals. Okay, McGuinness more north of the border, but they've all got goals. Obviously, at the time, if she'd have said we've turned a corner in the summer in August, we might have had more sympathy.
Yeah.
But given where we are at the moment, something you agree with or not?
I don't know, because I'm one of the positive people, right? I know I'm one of these people that a lot of people might hate, but I was quite positive, you know, when we brought Russell in and the players we were bringing in, we were the right sort of players that we've all wanted.
Mm.
However, when the season started, every single one of us knew that middle of the park wasn't gonna pull up any trees, and we all knew that.
Yeah.
And then it's gone back to the situation when we haven't built a big enough squad again, because we're trying to. Our budget's the sixth biggest. Was she say it was in the top six budget or something?
That's what she said at the start of the season, yeah.
So if you're top six budget, but the thing that irates me is not the players we're bringing in, it's the players that we've not sold, or we're still paying parts and parts of their wages, which if we got rid of them and we had someone to do that properly, we would have had more money to get these players that we wanted. So again, it falls back to incompetency of running a football club. So in my opinion, anyway. But yeah, that's when Russell joined, like I said, when Russell joined and we started bringing in those players, I was optimistic and I thought maybe they have.
Yeah.
But I was still reserved judgment. I wasn't going to jump in the old happy or I love Roland sort of people who are apparently the 98% of the fans. I was optimistic, but I still reserve judgment, and everyone's been proved right again.
Yeah, just on a side note on that, talking about players that we've got out on loan or that we haven't managed to ship out on big contracts, I was looking on LiveScore the other day at some of the Belgian results, and the amount of players I now recognise in the Belgian league just from coming over here is ridiculous. You know, the likes of Vetekele and Ceballos, for example, who were, you know, supposed to be big players for us. Obviously, Igor started well, but Ceballos never really got off the ground. But, you know,
creative player, Lapointe. He bangs him in though.
He does all right. Doesn't he?
I remember that game at Cardiff away. He couldn't trap a bag of cement. It was
almost
probably
as
one
if
of
the championship is above him. So moving on to the rest of the interview. Danny Murphy, as I say, was alongside Jim White, and the two of them asked these questions. So Danny's question was first, and he said, "Why does Roland want to be the owner?" Yeah. And Jim White, before Katrien had a chance to answer, I'm sure she was ready to jump in. Jim White followed that up with, "So what's next in terms of Roland's ownership?"
Yeah.
Katrien said that no one buys a club to fail. Again, said we went wrong last season, and does admit that, and then moves straight on to this season's actions. Talks about the players that they've signed in the summer again, and says we can only go forward. And that's something she mentions quite a lot in the interview. She says, look, the past is the past. We need to move forward.
Mm.
I think Card have made it very clear they're not prepared to move forward with these owners.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, that's something she goes back to. I mean, we've said it before. We don't think that there's anything that they can do now to turn it around whilst they're still here. Mm. Katrien obviously thinks that there is.
Yeah, well, it's a great PR answer. She's obviously been told that one. She probably had it on a post-it note, but it's a great PR answer. But it's one where I always think back, and I can't help but think back. It's the same excuse every year, you know, and you learn from your mistakes once and then you should try and bet yourself. But it's taken 2-3 years now to get us, and we're now languishing at the bottom of the League One. Mm. And it's got to that stage now where we've actually sat getting relegated from League One. From Championship, sorry. Oh, I don't want to tempt fate. Getting relegated from the Championship for us to go, hang on a minute, something's not working here. Yeah. And that's the thing that grates me the most. It's taken all that time just to realise that how it's being done is wrong, which all of us were saying since day one.
The worst part of that answer for me is she then goes on to say that they say, is he going to stay? Or I think they basically say to her, so he's going to stay. And she says yes. She says we've had no offers. Obviously, I don't think we know necessarily where there was an official offer on the table, but we know that there's been people interested. Mm. But she says, irrespective of that, the club's not for sale. So that's the line from the top. They're here to stay.
Yeah, I mean, she was always going to say that, and she'd been quite coy about it. She didn't say there was interest. She said there wasn't an offer, which there probably isn't a formal offer. I don't know. There's probably rumblings in the backgrounds and sort of inquiries, but I don't know if there has been a firm offer, which, but unless she's lying again, which, you know, maybe she is, maybe she isn't, I don't know.
Who knows? They go on then to talk about transfers. It was a subject that came up a lot, particularly soon after Chris Powell left. Mm-hmm. And again, this is something that we've heard in fans' meetings and that sort of forum. But here on radio, she was asked about the transfers, about who picks the team and who picks the players that come in. Mm-hmm. And she stated that the manager is in control. Obviously, we know that Russell has confirmed this. There may have been a couple of fallings out over certain players with between him and, as we understand it, potentially Thomas Dreisen over a couple of the signings. But Russell has sort of made the final decision on that. But previously we've heard, you know, Powell's confirmed that RD messed around a bit in his selection. But Katrien was there to reassure us, I think, that, you know, Russell's in full control of the team. It's kind of how do you react to that?
Well, first on Russell, I mean, I think we know that he's probably got the main say and transfers and tactics and stuff, because they weren't going to get another British manager who was going to accept their way of someone sticking their nose in, you know. And it's well documented, the situation with the Sheffield United game with Chris, which obviously went on. And yeah, maybe he's obviously took a seat back and said, maybe I can't, you know, put me in where it's not welcome. So I mean, I think Russell is in charge of it now, but again, it's taken all those appointments later. I don't know how many it was, five or whatever it is, five appointments to realise that that's the way that it's got to work.
She later on in the interview, they sort of expand on this a little bit as well, and they say that what if we just gave Russell a chance, and Katrien said here and now she was going to give Russell 2 years, you know, to do whatever he wants, leave him in control of the team. Mm. He manages the club, and he's got that 2 years, barring obviously potential relegation or anything like that, and just leave him to do his job. If that was the case, first of all, how do you think Card and the protesters might react to that? You know, if they came out and said, Russell's in charge, he's going to have this season and next season irrespective, we're still going to be here, but we're going to leave everything up to him.
Yep.
How do you react to that? How do you think the protesters react to that? Do you think that that's a start at changing the relationship, or do you think, as we've said before, that it's just gone?
Yeah, I don't think it matters who's in charge, whether or not the Card and the protesters, you know, peacefully protest and stuff at all. You could have anyone in charge, you could have Santa in charge, it doesn't matter. The issue is not the manager, it's the actual hierarchy, which we're not happy with. So she comes out and says Slay's got 2 years, blah blah blah, yep, great PR answer, and it's something that we should have had 3 years ago. Mm. and a bit of stability. But yeah, I don't think whoever's in charge is going to change.
And that's
the opinion.
You talk about a PR answer a couple of times there, and that's something that I thought came through the whole interview. We'll go on to talk about the fact that that calls were apparently rejected by TalkSport on the will of Katrien. But it did feel very much like it was an interview that was pre-planned. That there were questions that she was expecting and that she was able to turn into to answer she wanted to. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that you've kind of reacted that way, because that's certainly how it sounded on the interview as well. As she carries on, she talks about the door always being open. Throughout this interview, not only did it sound sort of PR and slightly spin, but she talks about still about improving communications, about how she's met with certain fans groups, which we know has happened, and that the door is always open. She also takes the opportunity to mention that that invitation was extended to Card, which again we know from her point of view, obviously a chance on the radio to say that they chose not to take the offer. So she still thinks that communication's an answer. She still thinks that if they harness the power of the fans, they can turn this around. And yet, we're led to believe that she refused to take calls on the radio from fans to discuss that and to open that communication. So how do you kind of react to that?
Yeah, see, I don't want to keep repeating myself, because it must sound like I'm just a broken record at the moment, but it harps back to before, you know. Card offered the olive branch before this season, the season before. There were loads of times where Card offered to come in and speak, and it was refuted, it was rejected, she didn't want to know. Only when now the certain swear word is hit the fan, it's only now where she wants to go, should we all be happy families? And it's too late, you know. You can't make this club what it is now and then just go, oh, well, let's start a clean slate starting from now and expect everyone to go, oh, okay, then let's crack on. It's not going to happen. And she's always going to, she says, you know, open door to communication. It can't get any worse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's only one way it can go, and it's to get better. But I don't think it's going to happen when these lot are here, personally.
No. Okay. Right, we've been talking pretty much solid for the best part of 15 minutes, so we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue to talk about the interview that was on today on TalkSport between Katrien Mayer and Jim White. So we'll be back in about a minute.
Sees, but Ormer Kovic's line, he's gone for it, you know.
Oh, what a goal!
What a goal by Ormer Kovic!
Oh,
that's almost at the halfway line.
Unbelievable strike!
That is outrageous. Right footed. Well, saw Ormer Kovic's line. What a goal!
Live.
That might have come through quite loud. If that did, apologies, but it's too late because you won't have had time to turn it down. So, as I say, me and Nath here today, we're talking about the TalkSport interview between Katrien Mayer and Jim White. She carried on, obviously, getting questions, as we say, possibly pre-planned. And the next one that Jim went on to talk about was the loss of season tickets over last summer. He says that I think it was the largest percentage reduction in the history of the club over one summer to lose that many people, because I think we had about 10,000 last year, didn't we? So about a 40% drop. And Katrien uses this opportunity, first of all, to hint that it was just the relegation's fault. She then goes on to talk about the affordable football. And how, despite the fact that we've lost 4,000 people, we've still got the cheapest season ticket in the ground.
Yeah.
She says that she's meeting fan groups about how to make things better and how to get the fans back. She mentions that she uses the word unique at one point, we've heard several times before. And also chooses this chance to mention the 25 years since the Back to the Valley and the Hummel sponsorship deal, which we're going to come on to later. A very PR paragraphed answer for me, but seems to ignore the fact that she's not only lost 4,000 season tickets over the summer, but doesn't seem to have a solution to getting them back, really.
Yeah, when I hear it straight away, it seems not laughable, because it's not, but you say in one sentence that you lose 4,000 season ticket holders, but then you then go on to say that we've got the cheapest season ticket in the country or whatever. So if you've got the cheapest season ticket in the country and your demand is still down, that's saying something, isn't it?
It's something that you would think a basic business person would understand.
If you've reduced your prices to so low that you're hardly probably making any money from it, and the demand is still not there, it's crazy. Whereas I think even if you had if you had another 100 quid onto a season ticket and they weren't here, I guarantee we'd have more than 4,000 seats. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, and it's not. And it didn't surprise me that we lost season ticket holders, but it did surprise me the amount that we actually lost. I didn't anticipate for us to lose 4,000 seats. I thought it was going to be like 1,000 or 2,000. Do you know what I mean? I never anticipated it to be that much.
Yeah. And you're spot on, and I think I completely agree with you. I mean, my notes on this one were that she goes on about affordable, and then in brackets I put, but people still aren't coming.
Bums on seats is the main thing.
Exactly.
You know, that's what you need.
And the fact is, people aren't coming. It's got nothing to do with the price. And as you say, if they were to go, I'm sure that things would be a lot better and the stadium would be a lot fuller. Jim White actually does respond and says, well, that all sounds great, but isn't the damage already done? And these people still aren't coming. And again, she says, well, let's look forward. Ignores the fact that we've lost these 4,000 people. Let's look forward. And also mentions Card and mentions it as a war. Now, that's a word, I don't know if Card have ever used it. I think it very much is a battle at the moment between the fans and the club. But I don't know if that's necessarily the right choice of word for the club to be saying.
That's what she sees it as.
Yeah.
You know, I've not heard anyone use that sort of language to say that we're at war with a club. Yeah, we're in protest, but we're not at a war. We're in a predicament where we want to make things better for our football club. If they want to see it as a war, then obviously they're obviously bothered by it.
Yeah.
More so than obviously we are. We're actually just doing stuff which we're entitled to do. But I wouldn't say it's a war. But like I said, trying to put a negative spin on people expressing their views, I wouldn't call it a war, no. But we all know how these guys are, what are the words? Not very good with their words, are they?
Yeah. Well, talking of war as well, obviously the first thing to say is that kind of immediately conjures up an image of violence. And she does go on to talk about, they sort of mention the protests, so they talk about throwing the pigs on the pitch a couple of weeks ago. They talk about the plane that flew over. But then they go on to some of the ones from last season, including the signature sent to company's house, advising that Katrien had been resigned. And also the people who went to her parents' house in Belgium to deliver a letter to them.
Yeah.
Now, all of them agree that one in particular was too much. Yep. I think at the time we said the same thing.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
But for me, what was frustrating was that it gave her an opportunity to focus on that one.
Yeah.
One that I think majority of fans would probably agree with her. One of the rare parts, times where we would. And ignores the other protests, which I would say have been pretty effective, and focuses on that. So, you know, TalkSport, they've done more than a lot of radio stations have. They've got her on air. But for me, it started to perhaps paint her a bit as a victim, which obviously was, as fans, not what we wanted to see.
No, and it's difficult because I can understand, obviously, our frustrations that there were certain, you know, there were certain things that weren't mentioned. But by the same token, they've also got her on, so they have to be mindful of the fact that if they're going to try and get her on again in the near future, then they're not going to just literally say, right, here's some questions, but when you come on, you're going to get absolute abuse.
Yeah.
And they've got to be careful in terms of whatever rules or whatever they've got to do. But, towards the end, it probably, from what you said, it did sound like it was a bit of a victim. That side of, you know, when people went to Belgium or whatever, it was unfortunate that it was mentioned because, like you said, more would have been focused on the pigs and the bulls and the company's house a bit more. And then it might not have been, because especially if it finished on that point as well, it would have been, like you said, she would have been seen as a victim, which I don't think she is, to be fair.
Interestingly, the only comment she did make about throwing the pigs on the pitch was she talks about it interrupting the game. Now, she says, I haven't got the quote here, but she says something along the lines of that fans are welcome to protest before and after the game, but if they're interrupting the game, then that's going to affect the players. This is a protest we've seen several times. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if we've won all of them, but no. Certainly in the majority of games where we've protested on the pitch, we've then gone on to win the game and it's got everyone fired up. So,
yeah.
Again, a bit of a non-point from there.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it affected the players. They probably get a bit, not frustrated, but just a bit, just want to play football. But I don't think that's in anger towards the fans. It's just because they're all pumped up, the adrenaline's pumped, and they just want to get on with it. But like you said, I think the Sheffield Wednesday, Carol Fry's first game we won, I don't know if there was a protest then, that game. The Sheffield Wednesday game?
Yeah, that was the game. I can't remember if that
Saturday.
Was...
Saturday. It was his first game, wasn't it? His first home game.
Yeah, because Forest was the first protest outside the stadium, wasn't it? I don't know if there's stuff then.
Yeah, and then Brighton, Borough, they were top of the league, absolutely flying.
Yeah.
Even though the manager left the day before or something.
Yeah, but we still took them apart that day.
Yeah, Callum Harriott took them apart. The Brighton game, not so much, but they were a good team. Burnley, not so much, because they were champions. Coventry won. So I think we've done better than most of the other games that we've not had anything, to be honest. Mm. I mean, look at the Oldham game.
Yeah.
No protest. We was absolutely dire. Rochdale, no protest, really, was there?
Yeah.
Absolutely dire.
And I think that was one of the things that I found frustrating listening to it, and I'm sure Charlton fans will agree that it felt, and as I say, I'm glad they've got her on in a... one aspect, because it does air things a bit and certainly gives us a chance to respond. Not immediately, obviously, on the radio, but we're able to now. But Jim White and Danny Murphy, and as I say, the third guest that was in there, they didn't really seem to be that informed. And maybe that's, you know, maybe you wouldn't expect that level of research. But, you know, if they had looked into the results of the previous protests and seen that we'd actually gone on to do well in a lot of those games, that would have been something they could have picked apart a little bit more.
Yeah, they could have done, but maybe, I don't know how the old producing of TalkSport works, but maybe they wanted to try and keep a balanced view, because obviously Jim spoke to her already.
Mm.
Maybe they wanted to keep Danny balanced because he played for the club and he had another sort of mindset. So maybe they just wanted to keep it balanced and it not to be a barrage of sort of questions and abuse. But that's the only reasoning I can think so. But
A good point to end on there, because I'd then bring up the fact that they do mention that, or Jim Mike mentions that they're getting a lot of responses on social media. He doesn't go into too much detail, but says a lot of people are tweeting him, which if you were following Twitter throughout the day, you would have seen as well.
Mm.
There's only one that he chooses to pick out, which is a quote from a magazine, I think a Belgian magazine, a couple of years ago, where the quote that is alleged to have been said is, "I don't care about the history of the club." And he asked her to explain that. Now, that's obviously come from a quote you've seen on social media, and that's the first and only time in the whole interview that I don't think she was expecting that question, and it took her a long time to answer that and adjust.
Who said that? Roland said it or she said it?
That was apparently quoted to her. She goes on to try and explain it and explains that, I think as she justified it, that the history of the club is not her concern. It's that she needs to focus on going forwards.
Right.
But given the Hummel announcement the other day, specifically to celebrate the 25 years of the Valley, given what the fans did 25 years ago to save our club, a quote like that still being dragged up and her inability to answer it is still a concern for me, particularly as they seem to be using this Hummel deal as a chance to show how much they do care about the history of the club.
Yeah, well, it was a bit of an own goal again. Yeah, she'd be getting thrashed if she was a football team, wouldn't she?
Be about 8-0 down by
now.
Oh,
my God. And then obviously the Hummel thing. It was a bit of a bolt out of the blue. I think I saw it on Twitter, and I thought, well, that's random.
Mm.
I didn't know who Hummel were. I've seen it about, but it was like a Danish blooming... So it's just random, but it's a right idea, but it's just like, well, it's not really something they would usually do. So I just think it's another company that's come in and said, right, you've got to do this.
Yeah.
Try and win people back. And I don't think, although the idea is great, whoever's come up with the idea, I don't think you're going to win many fans over and go, oh, all's forgiven.
Mm.
You're giving us a new kit for 25 years back at the Valley, which we'll all celebrate anyway. But it's just a bit random. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, they then...
Was it a corner flag thing? Was it, you know, on the website, had the old corner flag one?
Probably would have been.
Corner flag.
Yeah, it would have been. Right, they then, getting towards the sort of last part of the interviews now, and they mentioned Thomas Dreisen, someone who's caused, maybe not personally, but the subject of Thomas Dreisen's involvement at the club has caused a lot of unrest and upset amongst fans over the last couple of months particularly. She chuckles. We've seen her do that before. Whether that's a nervous thing or not, it's certainly unfortunate from her point of view, because it sounds like she's not that fussed by it.
It's arrogance or it's nervousness. It's the only two things.
It's got to be one of the two, hasn't it? I'm prepared to give her the benefit of the doubt on this occasion and say it's nervousness, because I think it probably is. Mm. And then goes on to say that he's still involved, but that Russell has the final say. Again, if there was either callers allowed to comment or interviewers who were perhaps a bit more educated on this, they would have been able to press her further, but they don't. Yeah.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Do you think, therefore, that particularly that part of the interview and what we've discussed over the first half an hour of the show, how does this interview kind of sit with you? How do you reflect on it? Because for me, it doesn't really seem to answer many questions. The answers seem pretty superficial, and the questions don't really go into the depth that fans would have wanted. That's my opinion. Kind of, as I say, you haven't heard the interview yet, but having discussed some of the main points, how do you kind of see it, and how do you reflect on it?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think it matters what radio show she goes on. It's all going to be the same rhetoric, unless by some miracle she can come in here and in this studio and have questions from us, which we're going to say a lot of stuff that's going to be quite blunt.
Well, we've talked about it before, haven't we? We've said if there was a way of perhaps, you know, vetting questions and finding questions and, you know, cutting out stuff that's obviously just insulting or anything like that, but constructive questions. But I can't see that.
And that's the only time we're going to have people, you know, like us guys and all the other listeners and stuff who can actually send in the questions. That's the only time where we're going to have an honest and frank discussion with her, because, like you said, pre-planned questions aren't the same. You can prepare for those. It's not what that's about. We just come in cold, and then it makes that person think on their feet, and they've got to say what they've got to say.
Which, as we saw, she struggled with the one question that was like that.
So it was good. I suppose that we've got a bit of exposure again, but was there anything that surprised me and shocked me? No, it was the same. You could have probably written it before the actual interview happened, what the answers were going to be.
I'm kind of split on the reaction as well, because I've seen quite a few journalists comment who listened or were either tweeted to by Charlton fans and told to listen to it, who were surprised at the answers and quite critical. On the other hand, I tried to, as I was listening to it and reflecting on it, I tried to put myself in the shoes of someone who perhaps didn't know Charlton, didn't know the protests or anything. How would I see her listening to her for the first time? My concern was that in that instance, you would probably come away thinking that they're doing quite a good job and that they have turned that corner. As fans, we know that doesn't appear to be the case. You know, we're down in the bottom half of League One at the moment. As you say, when they took over, we were ninth in the Championship. But that's how I worry that other fans may see it. And to that point, I wonder whether she's got perhaps what she wanted from the interview.
Yeah, I mean, there's always that element anyway, but the only thing we can do is just keep on doing and making the exposure there. So, unfortunately, because we're not a Man United, it's not going to be on the back of the pages, unfortunately. I know there has been, you know, sat on the press and that, what Lou and Rich do. But, yeah, it's disappointing, but it's the way it is, and we just need to keep going. And then, eventually, like we did before, we'll get what we need and what we want for the club.
We'll finish with pretty much the end of the interview as well, where they basically ask her where we're going, what the future is. She says she wants the club to succeed, which, to be honest, is a nothing statement, because you would expect someone in that position to want the club to succeed. She says she's a fan now, which I think is something we heard back in the first season when she was travelling to games via train, I think, with fans. She says, they ask, is Roland the best man for the club? And she says, yes.
Oh, that's good then.
So that's reassuring.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And they then ask, will he put the money in? Will he now spend big, do what the fans want and get players in? And her answer is, everything we do is for the long-term benefit of Charlton. Thoughts? How'd you react to that?
Whoever that PR person should get a pay rise, I know that.
They do spend 5 minutes of the interview talking about the training ground, the expansions as well, which, whilst they are good,
it's great having a nice, shiny, polishing, new, blooming training ground if you're in League One, League Two, isn't it? It's absolutely fantastic. Attracting the players that you need from blooming, no disrespect, Altrincham or whatever, do you know what I mean? What's a shiny training stadium going to do? It's nothing.
Mm.
Absolutely nothing. Until you're in the Premiership, Championship, it's pointless. Absolutely pointless.
So the bad news is that the interview doesn't really tell us anything we didn't already know, except that they're pretty much here to stay.
For now.
Yeah, for now, as you say. One thing I did see on Twitter after was quite a nice analogy, and apologies, I can't remember who tweeted this out, but for anyone who's a Breaking Bad fan out there, there's a scene in that where Walt, who, for those who don't know, is a crystal meth cook.
Yeah, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, okay. So let's see. We'll test you and we'll see if you think the analogy does work.
Right, okay.
He's working for another guy who's got a massive drug empire.
Yep.
But over a number of episodes, he gets tired of that guy running things and decides he's going to kill him.
Right.
He does kill him and then has to create his own empire from scratch, and starts losing money and getting angry that he's getting less money than he was under the previous empire. And another character says to him, we had everything. We had everything and you and your ego ruined it.
Yep.
And that kind of takes me back. When they took over, you could argue they had everything. They had someone who was quickly becoming a club legend up front. They had a bona fide club legend in charge of the club. We'd finished in the top half in the Championship. We were struggling that second season, but we had hundreds of games in hand. And the feeling, and I think the point that they were trying to make was, these owners did have everything then, and they seem to have thrown it all away.
Yep.
Because of their ego. So
it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Good. Well, yeah. I wanted to mention that because, as I say, for people who have seen the show, that probably makes a lot of sense.
I was wondering where he was going when he had the drugs and the killings. I was like, hang on a minute.
No, can I just say, I definitely didn't accuse Catcher of taking drugs. Let's make that very clear here on Charlton Live. There's a lot of things we do say, but that's not one of them. Before we get ourselves in any more trouble, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to talk about Saturday and the Bring Your Own Banner to Chesterfield game, which is coming up, and we'll also talk about the upcoming game and our Charlton connections.
Cousins, lovely ball into the park with Goodmanson. Can he take his man on? He does. He's trying to be pulled back, but he's in the area. The ball across the middle, Gaine! And there's a goal! Charlton have the lead again. Super work, firstly from Henderson, to roll it out to Cousins, who did a pinpoint pass into the park with Goodmanson. And instead of Goodmanson going on his own, a slide rule ball across the penalty area, picked out Vedekele, who buried his chance, and Charlton a 2-1 up.
Charlton Live.
So welcome back to Charlton Live, the big match preview podcast. I will just say that I know a lot of you have tweeted in through today, and there may well be emails as well. We have only got the hour, and my technical ability isn't the greatest. We will get to them hopefully on Sunday's show. I'm sure we're going to be talking more about this interview. I'm sure Lou or Terry or any of the others might have their views that they want to discuss as well. So thank you very much for them all, and we'll try and cover them, as I say, on Sunday. So Card released a statement. It was posted to Charlton Life on the 19th of October, so about 10 days ago-ish. And it says the following. It will be free speech day at the Valley on Saturday, October 29th, Card has announced. Card is urging fans to bring their own anti-regime banners to the game against Chesterfield, and following a series of incidents at matches that have seen protesting Charlton supporters targeted and bullied by stewards, Card is warning the regime that it will be carefully monitoring how the club treats its own fans. Free speech is one of the fundamental principles of society, but principles and common sense are severely lacking at the Valley at the moment, said a Card spokesperson. Earlier this year, the club introduced a new clause into the ground regulation specifically targeting banners that are critical of the owners. And it goes on to suggest that people should create their own banners, and that basically there shouldn't be anything that the club can do to stop you bringing those in. So have you made one, Nate?
Well, they're all in the factory at the moment, yeah. So no, I'm joking.
How many are you bringing? 20,
I don't know, 20, about 30,000.
Excellent.
No, joking. I've been, everyone's entitled to bring the banner, but I assume they'd have to be a certain size to get in due to fire safety. And
they will,
that.
Yeah. It does say fans should note banners should be no bigger than 150 centimetres by 150 centimetres to meet the fire regulations, and also reiterates that Card are opposed to any swearing, misogynistic or xenophobic slogans as well.
Yeah, so exactly. So, I mean, they can't really surely police it. Like they said, the whole day's called free speech, so you can say what you want as long as they're not derogatory or whatever. So, it'd be interesting to see a few. I sit in the North Lower, so there was a few. I think there was a few at the Coventry game that people to the left of me. Mm. Won't mention any names, but there was a few to the left of me that sort of had some, which was quite funny.
And I think I've seen quite a few on Twitter. I think is it Will Ball, CAFC?
Yeah.
Did loads overnight, I think, so he's going to be bringing a few. Obviously, this comes particularly off the back of the Coventry game where we saw one person with a flag being, it looked like, pinned by security outside the ground. We haven't really heard, as far as I'm aware, heard anything off the back of that. Are you surprised by that?
No. Yeah, there's always going to be let it die down and then see what happens. I mean, I assume the incident... that might still be investigated, hence why nothing's come about of it. You know, might be still going on, but apart from that, they probably just wanted to keep the red down and then just try and let it blow off.
Surprised we didn't even see Flaggy.
What's that?
Surprised we didn't even see Flaggy. Just
I don't know. It's a bit of an odd one. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that it sort of died down a little bit because it was the only way it could go. Whether or not they're going to be there again, I don't know. I don't think they'll be there again.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know, do you? She might have an entourage now, I don't know.
Could be hundreds of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone pinned outside the ground at the end of the game.
Well, at least it fills the stadium up a little bit, I suppose.
That's true. What do you make of the Card protests recently? Obviously, they gave Slade a chance start of the season. Mm. It hasn't really materialised. Since then, we've seen, pigs, planes and now banners over three games. Obviously the first of those we went on to win, the second probably lucky to draw, but I don't think we can blame the plane for that, although certain people might try that. Pleased?
I mean, they've been peaceful and they've been very well thought out, but you know, there's a lot of clever people part of Card, so yeah, I think it's been great. Hopefully they keep doing what they're doing and you know they keep staying positive and not, you know, and it keeps going the way it is. And but you know, like I'll always say, you know, banging the same old drum, as long as it's peaceful and it's not violent, which they will never do, then great. But then as soon as you get in that stand, you can, you know, you do your protest with the pigs or whatever. But after that, get behind the boys. I'm one for always getting behind the boys, win, lose or draw. But I think it's been fine. And I think the Coventry one really stood out. I knew it was going to be quite powerful, but I didn't anticipate it to be as powerful as it was.
And really grabbed the attention of the national media as well, which is obviously the main point. We'll just finish this chat about the protest by saying that the Card spokesperson finished by saying, "We intend to show the regime what we think of their bullying tactics and to stand up for free speech." So get your banners ready. As I say, plenty of people already on Twitter posting photos. And we'll see them all at the game on Saturday, which, as we said earlier, is against Chesterfield. And that leads us on to our Charlton connection.
Yeah.
As you said at the top of the show, we thought we were going to be struggling.
I thought we was clutching. I was looking through squads back, dating back to like 10 years ago, I'm struggling.
I think I went back to 2000, and we came up with three names. Now, I think the first one we'll talk about is Jason Lee. He was by far the most popular, certainly on the Charlton Life forum. A player, I'll be honest, I don't know a huge amount about. I don't really remember him playing for us.
Before your time, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah, as I'm only 12. Or I was when I was still buying tickets up until about 2 years ago.
I'm pretty sure he was the one when he went back. It was when we bought Clive Mendonca after he left.
Yeah, so just looking at his Wikipedia, he joined us on loan in 1997.
Was that a bit before, maybe?
So I would have been here. He played 1989 to 1991 with us, but played one game, and then came back on loan in 97. Three goals in eight games. And what did people make of him on Charlton Life?
I literally put it on Charlton Life as just, I put it out there, you know, expecting about two comments. Yeah. I ended up getting like 28, which I think is like unbelievable. But
we've only got 16 minutes.
Yeah, I know. So I'm it's a mishmash of Jamal and Jason in here. So I'm going to go right. So McBobbin said favorite Jason Lee story was him scoring the third as we came back from 4-2 down against Norwich before Lee Byrne grabbed the equaliser. Lee Byrne, one of the most exciting games I've seen. And he also said he was good in the air and had two left feet. So I don't know if that's a bad thing or if it's a good thing or two good feet, but either way.
Or we actually had two left feet.
Clive said, I used to watch youth team a lot when Jason Lee played up front with Gordon Watson, the best front pairing I've seen at that level. Ashburton said Jason Lee's hairstyling prompted the occasional comparison to a tropical fruit. Hazard a guess at that one. There's loads, but there was one. I've got to try and find it. Stuart, on that same game against Norwich, Stuart Barmer got sent off. Robson and Kinsella scored a free kick or something and they scored again. So yeah, I mean, there's loads of Jason Lee played in our only youth cup final. So to be fair, looking at these, there's been quite a few on here really.
Considering he hasn't had a huge amount of games.
No, but I mean, he obviously stuck out. He's obviously had a decent little time here, and
again, mirrors Christophe Lapointe sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a bit more influential than
Lapointe. Short time, big impact.
Yeah.
It's what we look for in a Charlton player. The second player we were going to mention was Leon Clark. In 2011 was with Swindon but went to Chesterfield on loan, scored 9 in 14 there. Unsurprisingly, when he went back to Swindon, he had a massive falling out with one Paolo Di Canio. Again, a slight Charlton connection there as well. Came to us in January 2012 in a swap deal for Benson, which that was the year we won the league, wasn't it, 2012?
Paul Benson, that years.
And came in, but seven games, and according to Wiki, no goals.
Jamal?
No, Leon Clark.
Oh, Leon Clark, sorry. Yeah, well...
So this is someone perhaps who didn't have such a big impact on us, but phenomenal player for Chesterfield, it appears.
Yeah, I remember when he came here, he came off the bench and he looked absolutely rubbish. Mm. He was really pony when I saw him, but he's obviously, he does the job elsewhere, it just didn't click for him when he was here.
And in fairness to him, was competing against the likes of Wright Phillips, Hayes, and possibly Kermigan at the time. So.
Yeah, I mean, he came here and he was like, "Oh, he might be all right," but he didn't pull up any trees. But again, we weren't exactly an amazing side back then.
And talking of not pulling up any trees, the final connection we've got, which would have been my choice for no other reason than his Jamaican goal scoring record, is Jamal Campbell Rice.
Yeah, he only played three games for us. So.
Yeah, 2001-04 with us, three appearances. Went on loan to Chesterfield at that time, and then went back to Chesterfield in 2016, so this year, and scored 2 in 9. But his best goals-to-game ratio anywhere was for the Jamaican national side, where he got 8 goals in 22 games, so better than 1 in 3.
That's not bad, is it, really? In national level, isn't it?
Not
national
bad at all.
Sort of striker.
But you've got another interesting stat about his time at Charlton, I believe.
Yeah, hang on, let me find this one, because this was amazing. It was on Charlton Life. I've not done the research to qualify this quote, by the way, people.
I think we'll take it, because it is a good
one. Oh, here we go. So it was on Charlton Life from Simonson. He said, Campbell Rice provided the cross for Paolo Di Canio's only open play goal for Charlton against Luton. That's amazing. I never knew Di Canio never scored open play.
There you go.
I know he scored the penalties and all that, but...
Yeah.
only open play goal. That's incredible.
I guess as such a maverick player, you just kind of immediately think of him as a person and actually forget what he does on the pitch so much. But yeah, so Jamal Campbell-Rice with one very important, well, maybe not that important, but important in Di Canio's eyes, assist.
Yeah, you've got another one. You've got CFC for life. So I remember going to a reserve game at the Valley and watching Campbell-Rice getting sent off after 11-11 mass brawl broke out. It was quite funny to watch.
Good.
And you got
love a mass brawl.
Then you've got someone saying he'd debut away at Blackburn. Someone sang the name to the tune of Tiger Feet.
Right. I'm not going to try that now.
No, I was going to do that. But then you had someone I weren't going to bust that.
I could see you think about it.
Maybe. But then you had Richard J. come up, also said there was a connection with Laurie Madden and John Vaughan. I think that might be a bit before my time.
I think it probably was.
But yeah, I mean, a big thanks to everyone on Cheltenham Life, because as I said, I thought there was going to be like three comments, but it was like 20 odd. Thank you very much. It makes the minutes go by.
It does, and this is obviously a feature we introduced about a couple of months ago when we were struggling for content. Fans have leapt on it, so keep it up. We'll obviously, Nath puts out his tweet every week with a little bone.
I will try and keep it to the past players only, because I think it was Mads who said, can we try and not have the current players, which it is easy just to keep talking about current players, but it's nice to sort of reminisce of the olden days, so that's what I'll do.
When we can, we'll do our research on the older players as well.
I've got a few years on you, I think, Tom, but
so we need Terry in here on a Thursday, don't we, really?
Oh, I was going to say something there, but I won't bother. Sorry, Tell. I won't say nothing.
That wasn't me either, Tell. That was Louis. We're going to take a quick 30-second break. And when we get back, we've got 10 minutes left just to talk about Chesterfield and the upcoming game on Saturday.
Jackson! It's in! Yes! Get it!
Jackson! Woohoo!
Charlton Live.
Welcome back to Charlton Live, the big match preview podcast here on Thursday, the 27th of October, looking ahead to the game against Chesterfield. And we'll start with Russell Slade's press day again, because my technology is useless. I haven't got the audio as we usually would, but I'll sort of summarise briefly what he said. This is taken from the club's website, and he says he wants his side to start with a greater intent and purpose when they host Chesterfield. Whilst we picked up 3 points against Coventry and then had an impressive first half display in the draw with Port Vale last weekend at Gillingham, we struggled to match that, and I think you'd probably agree with that. Nath, were you there on Saturday at Gillingham?
No, I was. I had to do certain plans. So
okay. Obviously heard that we started poorly. He says, I don't know where the start against Gillingham came from. It was obviously quite a tough week with the virus that went around, which is something he mentioned straight after the game. We didn't start with the intent and purpose that we have done in some of our previous games. We have no excuses. We had to really battle and grind our way into the game. There wasn't too much going on in the first half, but I was honest enough to admit they were the better side. In the second half, we showed good spirit and desire to come back. Just on that point, that's something we've talked about a lot in recent games, about the need to start quickly.
Yep.
We said it against the likes of Oldham, I remember, on the Tuesday night, and that didn't happen.
It's the home games. That's what it is.
We said it against Rotherham as well in the home game, and again, that didn't really happen. Coventry, and I know we got one goal, but you could argue we didn't really, you know, dominate in that. And we had to rely on those two late goals to really kill the game off. So do you see that being different on Saturday?
I think it all boils down to what formation and what sort of style of play we're going to go for, to be honest. Like you said, we always sort of say we've got to start quickly and sort of state the blooming obvious, but at your home games, you've got to do that. You know, I said on, I think it was last Thursday, that away games, I know we should take it to teams more, but maybe it'd be a little bit more conservative away from home. But your home games, you've got to take it to play. You've got to, going to have a lot of people come. It's still where we are. You're still going to have a lot of people sitting behind the ball. Mm. So you've still got to take it to them, but be a bit more savvy about it. But, I still, we've got to go out. And they ain't won away from home yet this season. Do you know what I mean? So you can't, your home games, you can't sit there with one up front when you've got that sort of firepower we have. You've got to go for it. Whether or not we do, could be a big surprise, but I think I know what's going to happen, but yeah.
Okay, so you say they haven't won away from home yet. They've lost four in October in the league without even scoring a goal.
Yeah.
But having said that, a similar run to Gillingham, a similar sort of position in the league to Gillingham, and we all saw what happened there, though granted this is at home. Off the back of all those stats, Russell continued today's press conference by saying, Chesterfield have got threats in their team, there's no doubt about that, and everyone knows how tight the league is. We played Coventry at home recently, and in the end it was a fairly comfortable win. They were bottom of the table at time, but they've gone on to win their last two games, and that gives you an indication of how topsy-turvy it is and how anybody can beat anybody.
Yeah,
you can't take anything for granted, that's the point I'm trying to make, and we'll need to be fully focused on Saturday. Agree, threats in their team?
You can have threats in every team. You're not gonna come up against a side in League One, League Two, Premiership, Championship, Champions League. You're not gonna come up with, against a team that has no threat whatsoever. Every team has a threat. It's how you deal with those threats and make sure that you put your stamp on the game to make your best players make and nullify them. That's what we need to do. And if you look on paper, we have a stronger squad, so we should be able to nullify their threats and play the way and dictate the play that we want to play. And then if we do that, that's how we'll get results. We need to start focusing on what we can do instead of always worrying about the opposition.
And one thing we could do, and it's probably going to be the main talking point either way, depending how it goes when the team sheet's announced, is play Nicky Adjose from the start.
Yep.
Now, we obviously awarded two penalties on Saturday. Ricky Holmes missed the first and Adjose scored the second. And Slade said in his press conference today, it would have done him a lot of good. Nicky's introduction off the bench was a welcomed one, and it was good for him to get himself back on the score sheet. We'll have to wait and see about whether he plays on Saturday. I'm not going to give any signals out as to what we may start with at the weekend. Now, that's not really a surprise, you know, press day. You don't want to be giving the other team any clues. Do you expect him to start Saturday?
Do I want him to? Yes. Do I expect him to? No.
So you still think...
I still think Russell will have him on the... I still do, honestly.
And how do you think we'll set up? 4-4-2 or 4-5-1?
I still think we'll have... I think we'll have two up front, but I reckon it'll be Big Mac and Novak. I think... Hopefully I'm wrong, but I just think... Because I don't know if Jose done anything to warrant his place, apart from scoring the penalty, yes. Mm. But in the other terms of play, which could be said to... We didn't play to his strengths, like we always say, but... Yeah. I just think he won't start him. I just don't think he will.
Did you see the highlights of the penalty on Saturday?
Yeah, I did, and I did see the celebration, which could be another factor why he's going, say, all right, mate, I'm the boss, stay on the bench. I don't know, but hopefully he starts. I want to see him start, but I don't know. I just think Russell has a way of playing, and I think he'll just start in there. I'd like to see Haddie go up top for a change, you know. I'd like him to take those defensive shackles off him. But then who have you got? We can't play Batar because he's injured and he only gets 10 minutes. But, yeah, I'd like him, but I don't think he will.
Adam Chickson played on the left, I think, against Crawley. It was a game we lost and it was a game against lower league opposition, but he did play on the left.
Yeah.
So there's potential to play him and Holmes if you really wanted Lookman up front, but... I think I agree with you. I think he's going to stick to keeping Lookman out wide for the moment, especially whilst Pataka's injured. And in terms of midfield, obviously the other week we saw Jackson, Crofts and Olverstad all playing in the middle.
Yeah.
It's a subject, those two in particular, Jackson and Crofts and Foley, earlier in the season, we had a big debate about them all playing. Who do you expect to start in the middle for Charlton?
Jacko won't.
No?
No, I reckon you'll have Olves and Crofty.
Okay.
I reckon, so you have a 4-4-2, Croft, Dolby, Holmes, Lookman, Noves,
which I think, Josh. I think that's how we set up against Coventry, wasn't it, to start with? And I have to say, that midfield, okay, we weren't brilliant, and Coventry, you know, weren't much of an opposition, but I did think that was how we looked a lot better in the middle. Mm. You know, I think at Jackson, we know what he's done for us over the years, but for me, you've got to pick Jackson or Crofts.
Mm. Key is, for me, are we short on time?
We've got 3 minutes left.
The key for me on Saturday is you've got to get... If we're going to play Crofts and Olverstad, you've got to let Olverstad have that bit more licence and get in front of the ball, which we said about not the Gillingham game, the one before that. What was it? When he scored the little flick thing.
Port Vale.
Port Vale. That's what we need him to do at home. When he got forward and when he got the possession in wider areas and he was gave it, not free roll, but he had more time, he put the cross in for Josh's goal.
Yeah.
You know, he had the finish at Port Vale. We need to be a bit more fluid in terms of him getting forward and then Croft sitting. But, I mean, because when we say rigid, what you see is sometimes you see us so rigid as a four, apart from Holmes and Lookman sometimes. It's so rigid, it's just two central midfielders, and there's no support there. So all we do is bombing our wingers on, and then go, right, cross the box, cross the ball for Josh, that's it, that's all you're going to do. And that's why I think he'll play Noves.
My dad, who's not a massive football fan, but probably comes once or twice a year and has done since maybe 2000, every season says the same about the Charlton midfield. Arguably, perhaps some of the Premier League years we had good, but certainly for the last 10 years, he said our midfield is always so static and we always end up bypassing them. So if he can see it, why can't Russ? Mm. But maybe he will. And as possibly Olverstad's biggest fan, if that gets
you have got a bit of a man crush, haven't you?
A little bit. I don't know what it is about him. But if he can get forward and more attacking, then that's fine by me.
I did have a man crush for Igor, though. To be fair,
did you?
Okay. Yeah.
What was it about him?
I don't know. I think he waved at me at Welling, I think.
So that's all
easily
it,
pleased.
That's all it takes, ladies.
Yeah, just give him a wave.
Give him a wave and they're all yours.
No, I just knew he was going to be a good player and it was just unfortunate the way it ended with Igor. But
he's still on loan, isn't he? So
yeah, but yeah, we ain't going to see him again. I mean,
be on 40 grand a week or something.
Yeah. But yeah, no, hopefully we'll see him back one day. But.
Right, Lou's not here. Usually as a presenter, I don't have to predict, but as there's only two of us, I think I will. But I'm going to let you go first. Because I usually end up taking your score, so...
Okay, I'm going to go for 2-1, Charlton.
Goal scorers?
Goal scorers are going to be... Nicky Adjose, last minute, but the first one to be done by... I'm going to go for Paddy.
Okay.
Paddy and Nicky Adjose.
He'll have got over his virus then.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm going to go for a 3-0. Olverstad hat-trick.
You are such a goon.
Because I don't host very often, so... Just get
3-0.
That in.
I'm going to get. I'm going to try getting to get you a signed CD or something.
You see what the odds are on that. I'm going to stick a quid on that. Right, that's just about all we've got time for today. We'll be back on Sunday to dissect that fantastic hat trick. Thank you very much for coming in, Nath.
No worries, mate.
Cheers, and thank you everyone for listening. And as I say, we'll be back Sunday. Come on, you Reds.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.